First things first, none of us have financial interests, right? No relationships to disclose. We're cool. No relationships amongst ourselves or with finances.
Never
here.
Met.
Never met at all. Let me introduce our wonderful group of individuals. I hesitate to say panel because we're all sort of working together in this session, so we are a collective, if you will. We have Diane Downing. We also have Janet Place. We have Pamela Sangweme. And I'm Ron Bialik, president of the Public Health Foundation. And so now that we're done with the intros, what you all are here for is what is it we're going to talk about this morning? First off, we're going to introduce you to the Council on Linkages. If you're not familiar, just do a quick, brief overview. Talk about what the core competencies are all about, where they came from, how we got to where we are today, the users, et cetera. And then we're going to talk a good bit about the tools that are under development. And when I say talk about it, we're all going to talk about it because we're going to share with you the tools, but also we're going to share with you where some of those tools are, where we are in the process, and get some of your feedback, and actually, in a couple of the tools, even get from you some ideas of what we need to include in the tool and actually include it potentially in the final tool. So you're going to be doing some work with us, so I hope you're okay with that. And then other comments from you of what else might be needed. My sponsor, the Public Health Foundation, and why it is we do this, our mission is that we improve the public's health by strengthening the quality and performance of public health practice. We're a nonprofit out of Washington, D.C., non-membership, and we've staffed the council because this is what the council does is critical to our mission, strengthening the quality and performance of public health so we can improve the health of the population. The council itself has been around now for about 20 years. About 20 years, Bill? And Bill Keck in the audience is the chair of the Council on Linkages, and he's a chair for life. Bill has been a wonderful chair, and people want him to continue as chair for as long as he's willing to do that. So we're delighted that Bill remains chair of the council. His leadership has enabled us to do a lot of what it is the council is set up to do, foster relationships between academia and public health practice, develop specific projects, initiatives like core competencies, recruitment and retention, public health systems research, in order to bring the academic and practice communities together. And also we like to look at ways that we can create opportunities for continuing education. Having well-defined core competencies for the field not only can help with the initial education of public health professionals, but can also help with the continuing education. The overall objective of the council, again, is to help bring together academia and practice, improve the relevance of what's being taught in academic institutions, and improve the practice of what it is we do in the community. There are 17 national organizations who are members of the council, and probably most of you in the room, well, all of you in the room presumably are members of APHA, and APHA is a member, and actually Dr. Keck is the APHA representative to the council, as Diane is the Community Campus Partnership representative. The council is funded by both the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Health Resources and Services Administration, and we've been delighted to have that support. HRSA originally started the council with funding. That went away for a while. CDC stepped in for a few years, and now HRSA and CDC are both partnering around the work of the Council on Linkages. So what are the core competencies? The competencies are a set of skills desirable for the practice of public health. And we say practice of public health, that means practice in health departments, practice in community-based organizations, practice in research organizations, even practicing in a school of public health. We're looking at these competencies being what's desirable for people, again, who practice in our field. They reflect the characteristics of, as we say, staff of public health organizations, the characteristics we want people to possess. And last but not least, and what's very important to remember, is the competencies are designed to serve as a starting point. And what we mean by that is, it's a framework, it's guidance to the field, but in a particular organization or a particular setting, there might be some competencies that one wishes to emphasize more than others. There might be some competencies that somebody wants to rewrite so it's better understood. There might be competencies that aren't in this that you believe are important for your organization. That's okay. This is not law. It's meant to be guidance. Some people have asked, and so I'll discuss this right now, is what's the relationship between the Council on Linkages competencies and the Association of School of Public Health MPH competencies? The MPH competencies are meant to help establish a framework to guide the academic enterprise at schools of public health. The core competencies are meant to guide the competencies that practitioners in a variety of settings, again, even a faculty member is a practitioner in education. It's meant to guide what it is, as all of us in public health, working in public health, the desired set of competencies. So one is meant to guide the educational programming of the universities, and the other is guiding us in practice and what it is we want to have and possess as a public health professional. With that, let me turn it over to Diane.
Okay, I'm going to review the history of the core competencies. First, how many of you have come to previous year's APHA sessions on core competencies or been involved with these core competencies in some way? Okay, just a few. So I'll spend some time. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't talking about stuff everybody knew. So the core competencies, as Ron said, the purpose is to help strengthen the public health workforce development process. The original set was adopted by the Council of Linkages in April 2001. It specified skill levels. They were difficult to measure. It was intentional. It was our first attempt. We wanted to see how they were used. The Council on Linkages decided they would revisit the original core competencies every 3 years. The original core competencies were developed by crosswalking all the core competencies that were present at the time, developed by schools, developed by the academic practice, training group. In 2005, Council on Linkages looked at them, found that there was widespread use of these core competencies, that there had been actually some research going on that demonstrated benefits and validity, and we decided it was too soon to revise them. So at that revisiting, we decided we'd go another 3 years. In September 2007, now it's the second set of 3 years, a work group was formed to begin to refine and update the core competencies. So again, the core competencies are a consensus set of skills, lots of input and discussion to arrive at these skills approved by the 17 national organizations that are members that Ron showed, that are members of the Council of Linkages. Extensive research has gone into their initial development and then has also gone into the revision. We decided that the first revision would be a tier two level of competencies for public health comment. This is sort of the mid-level public health professional. Released that had in June 2008, got a lot of comments, many, many comments, and those were approved by the Council on Linkages in June 2009. Those were now a jumping off point for a foundation for developing tier one and three. Is jumping off the right word, Bill? To develop the tier one and three levels, which was going to be entry level and advanced public health workers. And those public health comment began in November and December 2009. Each time we come to meetings like this to receive comments, to encourage people to go on to the Public Health Foundation website, that is ongoing. You can always give comments. And the refined revision of the core competencies, all three tiers, was approved by the work group in 2010 and recommended to the council with all three tiers and some minor revisions in tier two. Initially, we were not going to make revisions in tier two, but when tier one and three were developed, we found that sometimes tier three was the same as tier two. So I had to do a few revisions. That was approved by the Council on Linkages. They will stay as they are and be revisited in 3 years. What we are doing is a vote of the Council of Linkages can change things called examples or footnotes. So you read the core competencies, and in parentheses to define them, like public health sciences, there'll be EG, informatics, genomics. And we felt that public health is changing quickly, and over the next 3 years, those EGs could change. And if people wanted to change them, we could do that. We can change those examples. So in May 2010, had unanimous adoption by the Council of Linkages. And I do want to thank APHA members, any of you who provided feedback. There was, as Ron said, 1,000 comments that Pamela had to go through, extensive feedback. I am always surprised at the amount of involvement and caring and feedback, not only from the academic, but huge input from the practice level, which makes us feel that there's a gap. This is a need. I was practice at the time, Arlington Health Department, and there is great interest in these Council of Linkages. Presently, tools are being developed so that practitioners are able to operationalize the competencies. So why were the competencies, why bother revising the original competencies? Obviously, you know, everyone uses 9/11. That changed public health forever. It really wasn't, I think, 9/11 that changed public health. It was the anthrax event at the Merrifield Post Office, where we suddenly were first responders, just not supporters of first responders in public health. So we really needed to make them more relevant to practice. And the widespread use, they were being used so widely, we needed to make sure that they were relevant. 60% of state health departments were using the core competencies in 2009. So state health departments have really found values in these. Local health departments, interestingly, in 2008, over 30% of the local health departments were using the competencies, which actually is down from 50% in 2005. So we needed to look at revision to figure out why the decrease. Is there something that we needed to connect better with local health departments? And over 90% of academic public health programs are using the core competencies. And other power, CDC is using the core competencies for competency development, the public health training centers. Janet is taking the lead on that, and we'll be talking on that. The train affiliates, all the state health departments and local health departments are using train as a way to identify training opportunities, are using them. And many, many public health divisions have taken the core competencies. I'm a nurse, and Quad Council of Public Health Nursing waited for the revised core competencies to update their discipline-specific competencies, which come off these core competencies. And ASPH is staffing work to develop emergency preparedness core competencies for public health professionals, with this being sort of the center of those development. They're helping organizations with job descriptions, discipline-specific competencies. You can read all that curricular review and development. They can prepare health departments for accreditation. I will tell you that I teach public health nursing, and the public health nursing textbooks talk about core competencies. They're listed. We're evaluating the students using the domains from the core competencies. So it isn't only schools of public health, but also the other disciplines. Healthy People 2020 includes the core competencies in these three standards. Healthy People 2020, I have learned, will be launched December 2nd at George Washington University. So December 2nd, we should be seeing these competencies. And in the accreditation standards, standard 8.22 of the state standards includes documentation of the core competencies. So these are what you have, the FABs and the FEBs, and this is the FAB. The new core competencies include the main 8 domains. We didn't change those. We now have tier 1, 2, and 3 for public health professionals. They follow the rule. Kathy Miner, with wonderful expertise in competency development, helped us improve, refine these competencies so they're more valuable. So they follow the rules of one verb, no modifiers, and each competency statement is only in one domain. We had some competency statements in different domains. So she really helped us guide the work group through cleaning these competencies up. Okay, and now I pass it on to Janet Place, who's going to talk about the tools.
Okay, well, Diane's already talked about what we've learned about how people are using them. And when I started doing work on the Tier 1 competencies, that was something I've been wanting to do for a long, long time, because those of us who work with public health training centers are working directly with strengthening the core competency skills of the public health workforce. So as we began to look at the originals and even the modified Tier 2, we said, well, this isn't the public health workforce, because the Tier 2 competencies were defined at the time as MPH and 5 years career experience. Well, those of you who work in local public health or state public health know that we rarely see people at that level in health departments. And you can also say that I, speaking from a school of public health, that I don't see a lot of our graduates having the same skills that are represented in the Council on Linkages competencies. So, when we developed the competency continuum, I mean, it was clear that this was a new tool. And I will point out, we have a working group, we have two members, and what we have here, Okay. One of the things that I took charge of was creating a competency to practice toolkit, and we have several members of that committee in the room. Thank you very much. And this is a committee is predominantly practitioners, and that is very exciting, because that's the audience we're trying to reach with these core competencies. And I was talking to someone before the session, and Ron's alluded to it, about ASPH competencies and the Council on Linkages competencies, that yes, universities are using the Council on Linkages competencies. A lot of them now want to use them when they're developing internships and practica. So there's a melding of both, but the ASPH are for curricula development. So, you skipped.
Was that where I was supposed to start?
Yeah, sorry. That's why I was like, I'm not supposed to do that. So anyway, the purpose of the competencies is to strengthen workforce development for the practice community. So currently, there's a list in the back, which I think many people have picked up, but it's just an overview of where we are, where we're going, and of course, we want to know how you can help us do it. The continuum is a tool into itself, because one of the things we did, which I was excited about, was we removed the academic preparation from the three tiers. So they are now defined as entry level, management, and leadership. So somebody who does not have an MPH but has been in the health department for many, many years is serving as a nursing director or supervisor. In the old way, it wouldn't be defined as Tier 2 because there was no MPH. That's gone, because it's about people's role, not their academic preparation. So now when somebody looks, and you have a copy of the continuum, when you look at it, if somebody comes in at an entry level, they see what they need to do now, but they can also look to Tier 2 and say, where am I going? Where are the skills that I need to get to? And also in the original Tier 2 competencies, there were competencies on there that someone in an entry-level position wouldn't do and would not be allowed to do. And so we took those out, and some of those are about policy development. So now we see at Tier 3, the policy is developed by the leader, the manager implements it. Tier 1, you follow it. So as you read across those, you see that they build on skills. So we have that now. There's been a lot of questions in the past about what do the domain definitions mean, and so folks at PHF are busily trying to work that out to help people understand them better. I know when I first started working on them, thinking that everybody knew about them but me, but I ended up being a competency guru somehow. I didn't, community dimension of practice. Well, that term sounded so academic to me. you know. But now I know obviously what it means, but I think there are people who still, you know, they need a little more information. And we've tried to help by adding EGs along the way. The Competence to Practice Toolkit is a deliberate effort to develop tools that will help health departments with job descriptions, staff development plans, individual professional development plans, QI techniques, which Ron will speak to later. Kathy Miner at Emory, who's really she's the competency queen, wanted to see ways for us to, you know, how do we demonstrate competence? We know we see it, how do we demonstrate it? So she began the arduous task of trying to write outcome indicators for each competency across the three domains. So needless to say, in a very short time, she realized that as an academic, she couldn't possibly give outcome indicators for everything, and certainly didn't have the practitioner's eye. So the toolkit committee will take that on as well and get a lot of input from you in practice. And of course, workforce development planning and self-assessments. I have developed self-assessment tools for each of the tiers, and I put a copy of the tier one back there. This is a Word doc that will be available on the Council Linkages page that you can take and modify any way you wish. You know, you can add, you can subtract. There are also self-scoring versions, which are now ready and will be put up online as well. And so that's just another tool that you can direct people to, and that will help them guide their own professional development. We're going to develop, as Diane mentioned, we will develop more examples of how to help practitioners understand what each competency means. And another thing that's under development, folks in Wisconsin are developing a scenario-based assessment tool, which is really exciting. And is it ready? Is it done?
Apparently they're piloting it.
They're piloting now.
On the cultural competency domain.
On the cultural competency domain. So that's really... Okay, well, I'm going backwards. Okay. So the four tools that we will discuss in more depth today are examples of how one can demonstrate attainment of specific competencies. So we'll show you what Kathy Miner did already. Pieces of a sample job description, a 360 assessment tool based on the three tiers of the competencies, which is very exciting, and a radar chart, which I have never heard of before. So I'm going to learn something.
Made it up.
Did you really? No, you didn't.
No.
You did not. As a tool for quality improvement that Ron will discuss ad nauseum, I mean in detail, later on. So is this one of mine still? Whatever, okay. So what we want to know from you and what we want input on all the way along this process is, are these tools useful? What's missing? And, well, what other tools should we be developing? I mean, so that those are kind of the same thing. But we hope that we've been comprehensive already, but, you know we could be missing what would be helpful. So with that, I will pass it on to Pamela.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. It's so wonderful to see so many of you here interested in the competencies. I'm going to go back to the previous slide. So we're really, really, really interested in receiving your comments or questions, as Janet pointed out. And we have a feedback form. We passed it around. If you don't have one, there should be one in the back. If you could please give us your comments or questions, as well as your name and email address, so that if we just want to make sure we captured what you said. We may need to follow up with you.
We may recruit you.
Yeah.
But don't let that stop you from.
That would be appreciated. Okay. Moving on. I guess I was moving backwards there. So, how can one demonstrate attainment of specific competencies? This is where we're going to put you to work. And as Janet mentioned earlier, we're going to start by looking at what Kathy Miner put together. Then after that, we're going to have an exercise where we're going to have you folks come up with scenarios showing just how a Tier 1 professional can demonstrate that they've attained the specific competency, as well as their Tier 2 and Tier 3 counterparts. So the example we... Here we go. Example number one that Kathy developed is in the analytic assessment skills domain. Can some of you in the back see? If you can't, I would encourage you to move forward. Can you see okay? Okay, yeah. Thank you, Janet, for dimming the lights. Okay, so the competency reads, for the Tier 1 public health professional, this person should be able to identify the health status of the population and their related determinants of health and illness. So in case you're wondering exactly how do they demonstrate this, well, here's an example. Given a particular geographic location, the professional is asked to search the internet and publish reports for population-based health indicators and select those that are associated with the community. So all the Tier 1 person entry level is doing is identifying the health status of their community. The Tier 2 person, who will likely be their supervisor, should be able to assess the health status. And so provided with resources the Tier 1 gave him or her, the Tier 2 professional should be able to include current and historic, they should be able to propose priority action plans for the community. So that may include if obesity is a problem in the community, the Tier 2 may propose having some type of public health campaign. This is just off the top of my head. Educating the community that it's really useful to engage in healthy habits, eating healthy, exercising, not being all sedentary like we normally are here in the United States. And the Tier 3 person, who's everybody's boss, the CEO, a senior leader, should be able to review the health status of the population. Are you still tracking, or have I lost y'all? Good, I got one nod, so we're good. So provided with the priority action plans that the Tier 2 person created, the Tier 3 individual should be able to assess the merits and priorities. So in other words, they should be able to say, okay, this is, these are the situations we have, and this is the first step we're going to take. This is our highest priority. Does that make sense? Okay, are you guys still awake yet?
They're got a question.
Yes.
No.
Kind of outcome measures.
There are actually examples of how one can demonstrate competence.
Right.
Yeah.
The tool that's being developed, what's in the red, is meant to serve as the guidance to give some examples of how one might measure competence in each of those. So the tool itself will have a bunch of those examples in it. And so this is sort of the first like rollout of some of the draft ones to just see if we're going down the right path.
Yeah, thank you for adding that, Ron. Any other questions? You have a question? Okay. Now we're gonna do an exercise. I think everybody should have received a handout that's printed on both sides. So if you go to page one, Ron didn't receive one, apparently. We have the first competency that we would like you to work on in teams. If you would break off into groups of six or seven, and just spend 5 to 10 minutes coming up with an example of how the Tier 2 or the Tier 1 or the Tier 3 can demonstrate that they're competent in a specific competency, that would be cool. Is everybody clear on what I'm asking?
Right, and as you may know,
no.
There are certain, questions?
Yeah, I don't think everyone is clear yet.
No, I was just gonna say that in some cases when the three tiers were developed, there were certain ones that needed to be in all of them. So that's what you're seeing in front of you as the first one. Describes the characteristics of a population health-based problem. Remember in the old days when it used to be define the problem, which was kind of vague. but this particular competency is approached with different outcome indicators depending on the level. So that's why that particular one is the same. But the other ones, including on your sheet, use different Bloom's taxonomies.
No, you're good. Slight change of plans. We're not going to break off into teams because we won't have time to go through everything. So we just need feedback from the group. Put yourself in the shoes of a tier one professional, an entry-level public health professional. And given the competency we have at hand describing the characteristics of a population-based problem, please give us what you think may be a good example that would, a good scenario that would show that a person has mastered, has attainment. Gosh, I'm getting all my words jumbled up here. We just need examples of how one can demonstrate that they are competent.
And I think many of you are probably in the tier two, tier three level, so looking at what you would expect from employees that are at that tier one level.
Yes, thank you for adding that.
I think for me, where I'm getting tripped up is that it's so general that is the goal to actually define something specific in this role. So for example, would you expect a tier one professional to describe chronic disease as a population-based health problem?
Okay. I think you're saying that because it's the same competency in this case for all three tiers. Okay. I can see where the confusion would be. In some cases, do the second. Okay. Okay. I was going to explain why.
Okay.
Well, in some cases, the same competency may be required of a tier one, a tier two, and a tier three, but obviously it has to be at different levels. The tier one will be at a lower level than their boss, and the tier two will be at a lower level than the tier three. Does that?
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What doesn't make sense to me is, are you supposed to take a specific population-based health problem and plug it in here, mm-hmm. or are you in general saying that a tier one professional should just be able to look at the population and describe what they see?
Oh, I see what you mean.
So is it obesity that you're looking at? Is it chronic disease that you're looking at? Does that make sense?
I think one of the good and bad of describing the competencies the way we've described them is that each of them are more measurable than they used to be. There's just one verb and there aren't internal modifiers and things like that. And we also didn't want to get so detailed that it seemed prescriptive. And so by having an example that's more specific, like what you just said, in a particular situation, how might I expect somebody to demonstrate this at tier one? That's what we're looking to do, is provide those examples. They're going to be different based on the setting, but one of the problems we're having right now is we look at it and say, okay, what would that specific example be? But by us coming up with it and offering it to folks, others will be able to think of their other examples in their own setting. So it's a,
So this allows flexibility for you to tailor it to what the role is that you're assessing.
Exactly.
This particular set of competencies is not, they don't stand alone, they're part of the whole assessment domain. And so you're gonna have community assessment types of questions within their other, so you're ideally getting a lot of information in which to think about this particular one in real life.
So what might be your specific? You were going down with the chronic disease example?
So for example, I am a program coordinator for a women's cancer screening, cardiovascular disease screening, and lifestyle intervention program. So perhaps a tier one would be describe the burden of chronic disease in our community and how that relates to your role as a first aid manager, for example. And tier two would be actually describing it probably more related to the data around it and how that impacts your intervention. And then I might say that tier three in that same vein would be prioritizing based on the data and providing leadership about what direction to take based on the description that I'm moving from. But am I on the right track?
Excellent, thank you. That's great. Anybody else want to go ahead?
What about looking at it in the way that a tier one would need to know, be able to describe the characteristics in their own local community? Mm-hmm. The tier two would look at perhaps maybe statewide or surrounding counties, and then the tier three would look at it more regional, national. What are the potential partnerships that could be created to fulfill the interventions or the program needs in that way?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So at what point would something like the ability to conduct an epidemiological study or a community needs assessment fit into that? Is that a tier three, or is that completely a different conference?
That's one of the assessment domain. There's the assessment skills domain. So as you move down them, you'll see that there are specific competencies around implementing community assessment, and then
go ahead.
Certainly, being able to characterize a problem in terms of the burden, first and place, time, but also I think a simple conceptual model of LPP or 2020 would be easy for I think every entry level person to grasp. Really heading through then the old Canadian health field model of biology, lifestyle, environment, and the medical care health system, called health system, that would be available or have a range of interventions for that problem, just so that initially somebody understands it in terms of a context at tier one, and then at tier two. Being able to get some basic data, of course, about the burden. At tier two, being able to evaluate the relative impact of those conceptual fields and find the data for a particular community and develop an intervention program or propose an intervention program. At tier three, being able to evaluate the efficacy of various proposals and identifying resources to apply to them. Maybe that's a little bit too much, but I would argue that at the tier one level, we invite, encourage, empower the entry-level folks to have a conceptual model to begin with.
Yeah. No, I think that's great.
And there's competencies under basic or under public health science skills that directly relate to understanding and beyond of a socio-ecological model. So, I mean, then that's kind of, you know, these all work together as building a core set of skills. So, I mean, that fits with that.
I think it has to be more than just being able to say, we saw some report that said we have an obesity problem in our community.
Well, you see, look now, you know, at the MASH data, now they've got, you know, people then look at their own communities and so being able to access that and work with it is...
Well, while we're going to work to a second example real quickly, but before we do that, I mean, you can see the complexity in trying to develop this, and probably it's more difficult looking at a single competency versus the full set of domains.
Exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So that's a challenge here. We're trying to figure out how to do this best. But can I just see a show of hands? Do people feel that it's useful for us to try to articulate examples like the stuff that's in red here? Okay, I see now. That's good. Since you said it, you think it's useful? Pamela, you have a second one that we can ask people.
Well, can I ask a question real quick? Okay, and because one of the other suggestions that's come up that rather than doing outcome measures for each individual competency, have outcome measures for the domain as a whole. Because since the competencies are interconnected, and I don't know if people have figured if that would be more useful or, you know, so you're not having to think about, I don't know, is that something that would be useful? Or which would you prefer? Let's see a show of hands. Description, outcome measures for each individual competency or ones for the total domain. How much the individual competencies? How about outcome measures for the domain, the whole domain?
How about both?
All right.
Wants to be part of the work group.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on to the next example, if there are no more questions. And we're going to focus on Tier 3. So the example comes from the communication skills domain. And so the competency here is, you can actually see it in your competency packet too. It's number 3C5. The Tier 3 professional should be able to interpret demographic, statistical, programmatic, and scientific information for use by professional and lay audiences. And the scenario Kathy Miner put together is where the Tier 3 should be able to communicate with a Senate subcommittee on health and community well-being. The person should be able to give a 5-minute presentation on the rationale of having a population-based health program. So the exercise here, we're going to focus on another competency in the same domain, 3C1. And can you all read it from the back? It's also on the little packet, the little handout we gave you. I'll just read it out. Ensure that the health literacy of populations served is considered throughout all communication strategies. Now, I would really appreciate any feedback from you about how a Tier 3 professional would be able to do this. Might display attainment of this competency. Thanks.
How would they like a person?
You see why I asked about definitions for the whole domain?
So what would you wish that your state health official would be able to do in this area? So you're living in a state, there's a state health official. So how should your state health official ensure the health literacy?
Whether or not communications are understandable,
right?
The said tier two or three?
That would be tier three. The design of the study certainly tier three. The conducting of the study, perhaps that's a tier two study.
All right. There's a comment back.
Sorry, I couldn't hear. Maybe the gentleman in front was mentioning this. It seems like the notion of health literacy is kind of backwards here. At the tier three level, I think we have to be able to identify what literacy is. What does a person, a patient, a client need to know about a health problem? And that needs to be established first. Then tier two, that's a policy. Tier two, the way a particular agency or group dealing with the disease will implement it. And then at tier one, the entry-level person perhaps being in contact with the clients or developing materials for specific implementation then needs to know whether or not that is actually working and being translated into something that conveys information back and forth between the patient, the client, and the provider, or the agency trying to implement some kind of health improvement. It seems like you have to have the literacy defined first. And then at tier one, somebody understanding what we mean by literacy and being able to apply it in a context of their job.
I see what you're saying. I guess when the competencies were developed, we looked at Bloom's taxonomy and identifies happen to be lower level than insurers. So that's in part the reason why, does that make sense? Or am I confused?
And I think also though, addressing what the gentleman was mm-hmm. mentioning is that from a tier three standpoint of defining what it is we need to look at. Mm-hmm. What is it that we need to focus on? What are the issues? And then the tier one can in fact do some of the, let's say there's a survey that's developed, some way of doing focus groups. The tier one may be administering that, but the tier three might be making a policy mm-hmm. decision about how to get the information that needs to be gathered to make some policy decision.
Right, and I would add that the tier three person would be calling together key stakeholders from not just public health, but the healthcare system to have input on how policy would be made. That would help shape it up.
Thank you. There was one more comment, mm-hmm. then we'll move on to the next two. Okay. Yeah, this is great. Thank you so much.
That would be a domain level.
Yeah. Right. I think the integration is good.
Okay. We've all gotten our wheels turning here.
Yeah, you have. Thank you so much.
And you're going downhill.
She has to do all the work.
We're moving on. Janet,
we're back to you.
Oh, I'm up. Oh, okay. Okay, so is everyone here familiar with a 360-degree instrument? Is there anyone that's not? Okay, a 360-degree assessment tool. Well, for those, it's a simple thing. The 360 assessment tool is a professional development tool. It's not a performance evaluation tool. It's a professional development tool to better understand where you think you are in your skills, where your supervisor thinks you are, and where your peers think you are. And there are many such tools like this around now. And I think if anyone's ever gone through a leadership institute, that's always the first thing that happens. And it is very helpful because then you find out that where you think you might be weak, actually your supervisor thinks you're doing great. And that kind of input is very valuable. So the learned folk here at the Public Health Foundation have had requests to look at how this could be done using the competency, using the competencies. So, and Pam, I guess an instrument's being developed that will utilize the self-assessment that an individual will take, another tool that the supervisor will take, which is asking the same questions, but about their employee. And then another one, which would be the peers. How do you think this person is doing in this area? And then that information is compiled into a report that goes back to the employee. And then they can figure out where they want to develop their skills. So does that make sense? Is that something that might be useful? And remember, it's not a performance. People get scared because, you know, you don't want your peers to be pointing out your weaknesses. Although, maybe they're pointing out your strength, but it's for professional individual development. Okay, so the self-assessment tools, and this is a sample from the Tier 2 level, and actually, it says number one, none. We've actually removed that. There's no longer a none option on the self-assessment tools because the idea of the core competencies at each level is these are what, you know, the learned people up in academia and practice said that we think that everybody in public health needs to know because it's about the whole practice of public health. So we move that because we don't want people to say none because we want to push them somewhere. So, but basically, this is what it looks like, and you had an example of the one back there. So each one of these can be scored. Again, same with leadership and system thinking skills. You know, where are people? And especially now that we have self-scoring ones that will score for you. And as I said, the ones that are in Word, you can take and, you know, add and modify. Okay, do I do job description? No, you do. Pamela, job descriptions.
Okay, so we've received a lot of feedback from practitioners saying, gee, it would be helpful if you could provide examples or sample job descriptions that we could look at as we are developing job descriptions that have the competencies. So I actually got this online, but typical components of a job description, of course, you have your position description with the general areas of responsibility. Then you have the essential functions of the job. Then you have required competencies. Did everybody hear that? Competencies. About 5 to 10. Education and experience, physical demands, whether you need to be working 70-hour shifts or a description of the work environment, if it's really fast-paced, if you need to do a lot of travel. Obviously, it's going to vary from organization to organization exactly how you do this, but the components are relatively the same and give job candidates a clear idea of exactly what's being sought by the employer. So now we are going to develop a state health officer job description. I'm really excited. I don't know if anybody else in the room is as excited as I am about this, but funny story about how we came to this. Ron and I were kind of brainstorming about what would be most useful to everyone who attended the session. And, you know, like what type of content should be included in the job description component of the presentation. And Ron's suggestion was to actually have you all pick up your competencies document, look at the Tier 3, and suggest 5 to 10 competencies that you feel your state health officer should be able to do. Again, the purpose of the exercise, which I forgot to mention, of course, is to help you give your governor some direction about what types of qualities to look for in somebody. I know a lot of states have new health. They will have, thank you, new governors, and with new governors, we know that may mean new state health officers. So We just want to discuss the top 5 or 10 competencies that you want your state health officer to have. We've already kind of talked about how we're going to do it. So if you guys would just give us feedback, that would be really appreciated. Okay, so we also have this slide. We have a litter position summary. The state health officer will report to governor of X state, and the ideal candidate should be able to whatever, assess community needs, or I just kind of made that up because I don't have the competencies document on me, but
what kind of role
fire away.
What's the primary job of the state health officer? I mean, when you look at the domains, what is the area in which they're most likely to be their major?
So you would like the state health officer to be competent in all of the three-tier competencies.
Right.
Let's take that as a given. However, most governors have an attention span that's short, okay? And so, you know, what bubbles up there? Okay, governor, I've got 5 minutes. And this is what we need because I care about the health of people in my state and I care about my own health. And I want a leader in that state health officer spot who's going to be competent in X, Y, and Z. So what do you tell the governor?
For leadership and systems thinking,
yes,
ACA, insurers organizational practices are constant changes in the public health system and larger social
political
environment. You said number 8 in the leadership domain for tier 3? Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Yes. To see, that's okay. I can't hear you. Can you speak up a bit? Okay. Great. I saw more hands up. There we go.
It's a pretty good list of what I think we expect the state health officer to have to
do. Okay. Thank you.
One of the other ways we could look at this, I mean, and I didn't bring this model, but there's a model that looks at progression across career, and that in tier 1 is really you're learning about the human skills. And in tier 2 it's more technical, and then tier 3 it's leadership conceptual skills. So that's kind of a way to think as they, and that kind of helped us guide this as well. So.
Lynn, you had a comment?
Is there something that's
no.
Behind?
Yeah.
No?
No, I thought you had your hand up. Okay. This is great. I know. They would really appreciate it, I'm sure. Did you hear the comment? He suggested we send some of these ideas to ASTO.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Improvising. Should we move on? Okay. Now we're going to go into QI. Ron, do you want to take it away?
Did you take that in the slides or not?
I did.
Okay. Oh, good. Good. Okay. So, how many of you are involved in quality improvement activities?
Oh, good.
Whoa. How many of you are familiar with Plan, Do, Check Act? Or Plan, Do, Study Act? It's a general framework that we're using, many of us are using in public health. So, what we've seen thus far is a little bit of a disconnect in some of the quality improvement work and the workforce development work. And what we're trying to do through the Council on Linkages, through this toolkit, is to start showing how you could use some quality improvement tools in the workforce development area. And so what we're going to do is share one of those tools
right now, not so much the overall methods, but just a tool to get a sense from you if that type of thing may be useful and if we should continue down this path of integrating quality improvement tools into the toolkit that we're developing. Real quick, what do we mean by quality improvement in public health? There actually is a definition now. It was published in the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice in the January-February issue, 2010. It's actually free public access to that issue of the journal, that courtesy of Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. But what we're talking about in quality improvement is it's characterized by, you know, a deliberate and defined improvement process. And we're looking for continuous improvement over time. And so what's different than the way a lot of us have practiced in public health in previous years, previous decades, is that we would look for improvements, and a lot of times we weren't necessarily managing for improvement and managing the improvement process, and QI is helping us to do a little bit more of that. But here's sort of a somewhat accepted definition. I say somewhat accepted. I don't think you'll ever get in our field where 100% of the people will say, yep, that's it. All right. In the room, how many of you are familiar with radar charts, spider charts? Okay, all right. I'm going to talk a little bit about this and how we use it for this competency piece. So a radar chart or a spider chart really is a graphical way of showing strengths and weaknesses. And it's a team process to get a consensus and a picture of what may be going on, and then to try to figure out how to move forward. And so it's, a graphical way of looking at something. So for instance, in the Olmsted County, Minnesota Health Department, anybody from Minnesota in the room? Minnesota's doing some great work, by the way, in quality improvement. Is somebody in? No. Well, the Olmsted County Health Department, what they did was they used the radar chart to look at the eight domains of the core competencies. And what they did, you can see here, it says the outer ring is advanced, the middle ring is knowledgeable, and the inside ring is awareness. That's how we used to do the competencies before we have these three new tiers now. What they did in Olmsted County is they pulled together a team and said, where do we think we are as an organization in terms of the competencies of the individuals in the organization? And so as you can see, you know, financial planning, they felt they were pretty good. They felt as a whole, we were pretty high up there. Now, how did they end up in the middle of rings? Well, they ended up in the middle of rings because somebody may say, I give it a 5, I give it a 2, and so you end up averaging it out. But you'll notice analytical skills, they said, we're not quite as good there. All right. So it was a way for them to just give a picture of where they thought they were. Similarly, Livingston County, New York, upstate New York, they tried to look at their individual programmatic areas, their divisions, and look at what the competency might be in these different divisions, and then have the division heads come together and talk about where they may need to build competence. And they may be okay with the level of competence in their division, but there were some areas and some patterns they saw throughout the organization and said, okay, well, let's see, in domain 4, and I can't remember which one that was at the time, a lot of them were the staff they felt were less competent, but in one area, the prevention folks, they felt they were more competent. So maybe our prevention folks can help build the competencies and skills of those in some of the other units. And that's how they use this radar chart. So the way you can do it is you have to agree on a scale. And we typically go with a 0 to 5, 1 to 5 scale. There's nothing in place or, 0 all the way to throughout an agency or the highest level, or you can say strongly disagree all the way to strongly agree. I mean, you could decide on a scale. And then you bring a group of people together to deal with the question in hand. In this instance, we've used this with a couple of organizations around performance management, and there are 4 quadrants and 4 main parts of performance management: standards, measures, reporting on progress, and a quality improvement process. And you say, okay, where do we stand? How good are we in this? And what's also nice about a radar chart is the radar chart you might not only use for noting what the group consensus is, but you can do the range as well, what was high and low. And you could also write in there why. because the discussion around the radar chart and the scoring is probably more valuable than the scores themselves. And so it captures all of that. And then you say, okay, the inner ring is where we are. Well, where do we want to be? So what's the current state, which is the inner ring in this instance, the future state where we want to go, and then you note the gap and you start writing, how do we get there? Let's have discussions about how to get from the current state to the future state. So with the competencies, and we've done this with we did a training with boards of health, where we said, okay, board members, what's your role in workforce development? You should not be micromanaging your organization, but you should know something about the skills and competence of those within the organization. So why don't you as a board do your own radar chart of where you think the senior management, let's say, is in the organization and the leadership. And so the board would go and do that. And you might ask the senior management to do the same. And you look at the differences. There may be perception differences, or there may be real differences, but it's a good discussion between the governing board and the management of the organization, leadership of the organization, and you can have a strategic discussion about how to build towards greater skill and competence, and what can the board do to be supportive, and what is it that the management can do to build? Because you don't want the board doing the actual building. In my opinion, boards need to be strategic, not get involved in the operations. So, again, you can see how this can be constructed. Then after you go through the process and you have this, you periodically take the radar chart back out and you look and see where we are. How have things improved? Have things moved towards the outer ring? The outer rings are the higher places, or the better states you want to be. And then you again continue to observe the gaps and determine your priorities. So we're going to do a real quick exercise. This is my flip chart paper. Wonderful radar chart? Can everybody still see the wonderful radar chart?
It's just blown out everywhere.
Should we try something?
Yeah, I don't think post-it notes are meant to be hanging.
Yeah, post-it notes
are. Thank you very much.
Point that
okay, so let's go domain by domain. Whoops, where's my comments?
Oh, there was yours.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So the question is, got a bunch of bright people in the room, a bunch of experienced people in the room. I'd like you to give your assessment of our current public health workforce in the United States. Okay? This is going to be a highly scientific, quantitative study. Any epidemiologists in the room? Oh, good. Oh, folks. You guys can leave that. No. Okay. So let's just look at the domains. Analytic assessment skills. Let's look at, and let's maybe limit ourselves. Well, we started with state health officers. Maybe what we could do is limit ourselves to state health departments. Is that easier for people to think about? Nah, let's do our whole workforce. Okay. So on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being our workforce is as competent as it possibly can be in a domain. That's 5. 0 is we don't have anything. We don't even know what that competency is. So on a scale of 1 to 5, analytic assessment skills, where are we as a nation? Just shout out numbers.
3.
Any differences? No ranges? Wow, okay, our average is 3.
1, 2, 3.
All right, domain 2. Policy development, program planning skills. Where are we as a nation? A workforce. Policy development and program planning skills.
3.
2. Anybody have any tea? Everyone. Tea party.
Bill says 3.5.
Can't do halves. Three or four? Well, okay, so we've got, let's say, it's slightly lower than, I forgot to put the numbers up, but it's slightly lower than three, but the range is 3 and 2. Okay. See where I'm going with this? It's relatively easy. You get your staff involved or community members involved, there's this communication skills. Where do we stand? Anybody on this? Four? Who said four? Four. Okay. Four?
Three.
Three.
Two.
Two.
One.
Who said one?
I did.
Ooh, okay.
So do that. So
we got.
Oh, you don't average.
So we got the range and the average. How many said three? Yeah, we were sort of, and there was a one. So we're probably a little bit lower than we were on the other one. Okay. Again, this is not a. We're not comparing, we're comparing ourselves to ourselves, which is how competent are we? Because we have all of the measures figured out because you guys came up with some examples. cultural competency skills.
Two.
Three. I'm sorry, did you say three?
I said three.
Two, three. Okay, so if we're a little bit lower here, we're a little bit closer to two. But there were a number of threes. Okay. Community dimensions of practice skills. Four.
Yeah, I think that's
right. We've got
to help educators.
Four. Not many disagreements, so we'll go with four. All right. I wanted to show a range here because. Let me shout now. Public health science skills. You seem like a scientist. One. Three.
See, that depends. That's tier based.
Two. Two. One.
Oh.
Anybody on this side? What numbers?
I don't have any from the tiers. That's.
Yeah.
Three. So we've got.
Yeah.
So range is one to.
Health,
did anybody say four? Mm. No. Range is one to three. So we're probably around here. Okay? Financial planning and management skills.
Yeah, one.
One?
That's the highest need in all assessments.
Three.
Really?
Three. Two.
One.
We're closer to one on that than I thought.
Interesting, that's one that comes up all the time as number one on all
okay,
the
last,
assessments.
Okay, last but not least. Last but not least
Leadership
and systems thinking skills. Three for the whole workforce.
I'll say
four.
I'll raise you to four and see.
Four for the whole workforce? Wow.
Well,
okay.
You average
three, four.
The
four.
Two.
One. We're a positive group, aren't we?
So, okay, well, you know, here's a big range.
It'll go down. What? I know, exactly.
So what you do, you finish it, you connect the
averages.
Connect the dots through the process. So I might say, okay, I might look at this, and intuitively I might say we don't need to do much work here. However, in talking about the desired state and the condition we're in, you might say this is the most important one to work on. So you don't just look at it and say we scored high, so we don't have to work on it. You might see something that's low, and you might say it's right now at this given point in time may not be as important. So you have to define the desired state based upon what you're trying to achieve, and then again work on the gaps and how you get there. So is that type of a tool useful for the toolkit? Okay, okay. So Diane, I think we send this back to you. Whoop.
I just get to summarize, so this is quick. So this is what we've done. Oh, questions?
No. I'm sorry.
Okay. We've discussed four tools. These are the four tools. We would like you to email Public Health Foundation. If you go to phf.org, you'll see a place to email about competencies. What else is needed if one of these tools was particularly useful in your ideas? The tools will be provided online as they're developed. There's a Council of Friends list, I assume, since he asked you to join it online.
Oh,
Pamela's signing around a Council of Friends list. If you would sign that and give your email, you'll become a part of a list that Pamela sends out, keeps us informed. And there's Pamela's email as well. So you can go on to the website for Council of Linkages. There's a comment, there's a place. If you go back and try this, go on there and give a comment that you tried it, how you tried it, who you tried it with, and how it worked. We very much need, this was critical to move this forward, so this was very important. Thank you so much. No one walked out, or very few, so thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Any questions?
Questions?
Can you go back to the email?
Oh, go back to the email, sure.
Yeah. And something else, something we're building into the website for the council is with the various tools and resources, there'll always be an opportunity, a feedback feature there. Mm-hmm. So you won't even have to hunt for it, and you'll be able to rate tools so that people in the community can get a sense from others mm-hmm. in terms of use. We're going to monitor use and let you know if others are using
it.
And the stories are great. Mm-hmm. You have to learn from one another. We all have to learn from one another, and sharing your stories is perfect.
Is to look at Council of Linkages, those 17 organizations, you're a member of APHA, go to the name of the person that represents you on Council of Linkages, and tell us what you need us to say, what you want us to say on those linkages, have us come and talk with you. So Bill is the APHA one, if there's any from CCPH, on your link, if there's nursing, Jean Matthews is the link for nursing. Get us, make us work, make us come and do some work for you.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And thank you.
Thank you. This is very good.
Yeah, you're done. Thank you. To the panel, it's not your name.